Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And everything's coming up podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Hell Labs Ironic Punishment Division. So you like donuts, eh? Well, have all the donuts in the world. That's their tagline. I'm creating that right now.
I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
I kind of want in.
Yeah, I think that the way that they presented...
Mine would be too many Spin City DVDs.
Really? Oh, yeah, what would be your ironic punishment division? I'm trying to think about that. Mine would probably be too many hummus chips. Too many hangs with my cat?
Yeah.
Is that where you're going?
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be you'd have to hang out with your cat for eternity, and I would be fine with that.
That'd be great.
I know. Today we are talking about Treehouse of Horror 4. Directed by David Drybone Silverman, executive producer David Merkin, and the writers, I mean, watch Conan O'Brien, the late Bill Oakley, the estate of Josh Weinstein, Greg It's Alive Daniels, the disfigured Dan McGrath, and Bilious Bill Canterbury. And the original air date was October 28th, 1993.
Ooh, that's perfect. I love when the Halloween episodes are just so Halloween-y in their date.
I know. Oh. Right there.
Man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Halloween has come and gone in LA, but I still feel it in my bones.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Halloween stretches on until at least mid-November.
Yeah, watching this episode, even though we just did, like, we kind of just talked a little bit about treehouses, like, it just felt spooky and scary and great, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we are joined today by our lovely guest. See, I go off the rails immediately within the first couple of minutes. Deanna Rooney.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
I'm sorry I have that effect on people.
No, I
I'm
mean,
kidding. I really don't. And
no,
also,
you
can't
do.
Stop staring at this cat right now.
Shout out to my cat, Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. No, I know. I talked to you about being on the show a while ago, and you said you always wanted to do Treehouse of Horror, which I love. I love that. Like, that's such a specific, like, obviously you have to do it. And, yeah, you work in animation.
I do.
And so is there, like, an animation-y reason why Treehouse of Horror speak to you above all the other Simpsons episodes?
Honestly, I don't know. No, I don't know. It's like, I fucking love Halloween.
Oh, well, you
but
do
like,
kill
not
it
like
every
an
year.
Overly, like, emo-y, gothy way, but
no.
Just, like...
I'm glad you made the distinction.
I know, because everyone would be really sad and confused at home right now. I'm so sorry no one hate me. No, I just, like, it was, like, just, like, it was, like, something I look forward to every year as a mm-hmm. kid. It was just, like, it was just, like, a family event. It was, like,
yeah.
You know, like... Easter, you just watch, like, all the Indiana Jones movies that grossed you out and made you not want to eat any food. And then Halloween, we watched this. And it was just it was fantastic. We were a TV family.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, same here. I wouldn't have picked Easter to Indiana Jones, though. That seems kind of random, but I love it.
I think maybe it was just on, like, USA Network or something. It was,
that's
like, probably
funny.
Just, like,
oh,
something
yeah.
that one network always did. And I was just like, well, that's what we do. I don't
that's
know.
That's such a great, though. That's brilliant as a marketing move for that network. But, like, that's such
what
a
do
great
we get?
Random, like, okay, how can we tie people in? People are going to be sitting and processing food on Easter anyway.
That's funny.
So let's just do a marathon.
Did you have an Easter tradition for movies?
I don't think so. Well, my birthday always landed around Easter, mm-hmm. but we would just always have, like, you know, some piece of lamb and some asparagus and holiday sauce, and we'd go to church, and that would be it. When I was a kid, of course, it was Easter egg hunts, but then, of course, you grow out of that, and I don't know. I didn't really have it. I think we just, like, lazed.
Yeah. Yeah, mine is Jesus Christ Superstar every year.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Every year. I love Easter because of that. And then
wow.
also maybe Harvey.
Yeah, I just like having traditions. I just think that's fun.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
like weird, arbitrary traditions.
That's why I love the Treehouse of Horror so much. Like, it's every year you know what's going to happen, and it's just the security of, like, I'm going to get scared or laugh a lot, and hopefully both, and usually it's both.
Yeah, and... I mean, you mentioning that you love Halloween. We were talking about this off podcast. You and your husband, Jonah, kill it every single time. And Jonah, who's been on the show, so people know him, but you kill it every single time with your couple's costume. Can you give us a rundown of, like, the last three or four costumes that you guys did? So this
year
was great.
This year we did, from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. We did a bit of a deep cut. We did when Pee-wee and Mickey get pulled over by the cops and they're incognito.
The little dance that Pee-wee does when he shows off the
dress. And just how giddy Pee-wee is, enacting as this wife. Oh. It's so cute.
And Mickey kind of likes it. Like, there's like a very short shot of him smiling a little bit and then realizing, hey, it's a man.
That look, like, it gets borderline a little like rapey looking. Yeah.
But as a child, you're like, they're just having a good time.
Yeah. Like all adults do.
Yeah, yeah. So that was this year. What did you guys dress up as last year?
I get the years confused, but I think last year was Chainsaw and Dave from Summer School.
Okay.
I think that was last year.
Kind of another deep cut.
Yeah. No one knew who it was at all whatsoever.
But you had fun.
So we had fun. Jonah got bummed again. Oh, wait, no. Last year was True Detective.
Oh, that's right.
That's so fun.
You guys killed it, too.
I was old, bald Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
And it was the worst bald cap I've ever done in my life.
But it was so good. I think the worse the bald cap on a lady, the better for me.
Sweet. I wish we ran into each other more.
Yeah, you should. And you guys have done Simon and Hecubus from Kids in the Hall.
We have done that.
Flawlessly.
And then we did Torgo and... the master from Manos, Hands of Fate.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Which there was talk of, like, I was going to maybe do Mike Nelson's Torgo with the pizza box, which is a deeper cut to Mystery Science Theater. Right now, the cat's, like, climbing along the bottom of this couch, just kind of scaling it and sliding.
I was trying to delicately... help the cat from not doing that. And then in the process,
I help the cat shut up a little bit.
Yeah. I know the cat etiquette, and in the process I almost whacked Allie with my mic. So there's God, mile a minute. Are you guys keeping up? I hope wherever you're driving, you're not going off the road trying to keep up with all this action.
It's my fault. I have horrible cat ADD. I get distracted really easily.
Should I take the cats away?
No, you're fine.
I promise.
I mean,
this is why we can't have nice cats.
I agree. I'm glad you're finally saying it.
So you love Halloween, but what was the reason that this particular episode, there are so many, and I'm sure it's hard to choose, but why Treehouse 4?
Oh, to get whack some philosophy. No, it's just, I don't know. Like, when you guys asked me to do this, I had to, like, really, like, revisit the list and be like, okay, shit, which one is my favorite? Which is so hard.
So many.
And so many elements of it where it's, like, a specific, like, bit of it of one episode would be, like, the best thing you've ever seen in your life. But it's, I just kind of, just picked it off of, like, just rewatchability. Like, it's like a good album almost, like, where it's, like, from top to bottom, you could just rewatch it and not feel like you have to skip anything.
That's a great point, especially with the Treehouses, because they're the only episodes of The Simpsons of that specific kind of all these different short stories. So to think of it as an album feels completely appropriate. Oh, I love it.
Like,
yeah.
I almost picked Treehouse 8. I was tossed between it. That was just more of a bit of nostalgia because my brother and I used to do the fish shaking spider all the time. It was just our favorite thing growing up.
I love that.
I don't know why whatsoever.
Because it's hilarious.
And I mentioned it. We did a tribute to Treehouse of Horror episode, just like a bonus episode. And I mentioned your painting, which you did for the Simpsons Art Show at Meltdown, which was the fish shaking spider. It was so perfect and simple and beautiful. And I think, sorry to like completely embarrass you, but it was perfect in that simplicity. It, like, you got the whole reference. And yeah, anyway, you're good. You're a good painter.
Also, that painting is 100% yours if you want it.
Okay, I'll take it.
Oh, do it.
Yay!
That's how you get art from Deanna Rooney.
Yeah. That's how you get art from me, too. You
like
would
it,
call it art.
So before we get too far into this episode, we should read from the guidebook.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are so many different... You know what? How about this? I'll just read all the segment summaries. So
perfect.
This will take a minute, but whatever. I'll take a big breath. At the power plant. Oh, so this is the devil in Homer Simpson. At the power plant, Homer declares that he would sell his soul for a donut. He is visited by the devil in the form of Ned Flanders, who grants Homer's request. That night, after Homer takes the last bite of the donut, the devil reappears to claim his prize. Marge and Lisa protest, demanding that Homer be given a fair trial. Satan agrees to hold court, and at the trial, Marge produces an old photo with a note from Homer that reads, "Dear Marge, you've given me your hand in marriage. All I can give you in return is my soul, which I pledge to you forever." Oh.
That is so sweet.
So sweet. The note convinces the jury that Homer's soul is legally her property, not the devil's. The Prince of Darkness accepts the verdict, but he vows that the ill-gotten donut will forever be on Homer's head. The next morning, a delicious donut-headed Homer is surrounded by a squad of coffee-drinking police officers waiting outside his house. That is the best summary we've ever read in this book.
It was perfect. It was beat for beat. Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it segment by segment. So that
I
was
agree.
The devil and Homer Simpson. So we have Ned Flanders as the devil, which is so fun.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah. He's always the one he least suspects. That is one of the examples of from my little McFarlane home environment toys. Mm-hmm. There, I had the Ned Flanders devil, and that was his quote, and I just loved it so much, and that's all he said, I think.
Right.
Like, I don't think there were really other like pulls from that, but I just remember thinking that was the greatest thing, and just putting him in the Quickie Mart in different places because you can move him from home to home, and it was a really good time.
Having a Treehouse of Horror version of a character on The Simpsons in an action figure is a special thing.
It is. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I also really love, so outside of the segment, I really love Bart being the person who's kind of guiding the whole show. I think that's super fun.
Yeah. Walking through the paintings.
Yeah.
Yeah, which always is, whenever they do new intros for this, for the Treehouse of Horror episodes, it just feels so creative because they're able to stretch so entirely outside of the world and outside of their regular format that anything goes.
Oh, definitely. But at least, well, for the first decade of Simpsons, they do a good job of still like grounding the characters within that.
Totally.
It's like, you know, Marge is still concerned, like, oh, people might get scared, you
know? I know. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The War of the Worlds broadcast. That made me laugh a lot.
Yeah. I wrote down one of my favorite quotes from this episode was from Lionel Hutz when he swoops in to help Homer and be his lawyer in the devil court. He says, "Don't you worry. I watched Matlock in a bar last night. The sound wasn't on, but I think I got the gist of it."
I love that so much. I love that Lionel Hutz appears in this. You get a lot of stuff packed into this little episode.
Yeah.
It's got so much heart too. Like I forgot that it was like such a sweet like Marge and Homer episode.
I know.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say off of what you said, that's a great way that they grounded the show too, in that we see, I mean, it's not entirely the wedding story that we know for Marge and Homer. They twisted it a little bit, but we still see that they're married in love, that, you know, Homer's always been a dope, and I don't know, everything sort of checks out in the way that it's presented in the story. It doesn't completely detach from like what we know them as and their relationships.
Totally.
I'm done.
I was going to say that I really love when Mr. Burns sees the devil. He's just like, "Who's that strapping, like, goat-legged fellow?"
I know.
Oh, that's the Prince of Darkness. He's your 12 o'clock, sir.
Yeah. What were some of your favorite moments from this segment? The infernal, the ironic punishment of the donuts? That's become a popular gif.
It has. And also, isn't there there's a toy of it, right? Or someone did a sculpture of it?
Oh, that's amazing. I don't know. I would remember. Like to
I
own it.
I could have sworn I saw it somewhere on the internet, but the internet has a way of tricking you.
Yeah. Like, Eminem is still alive, you guys. He's one of those where every like year there's a new person that's magically dead and they're not. Anyway.
It's a fun game.
It's a fun game.
I don't know. It just... Oh, it's hard to pick any particular thing about because it's like they pack it with so many jokes in a non-grating way.
Yeah.
Back to what Allie said, like the level of heart behind everything, where it's like it's such a weird thing for there to be like genuine stakes in a Simpsons episode, mm-hmm. and you're like actually genuinely frightened for Homer, which has never happened because he's just a dope.
Yeah.
But it's like because you're feeding off of just Marge, and it's like it's so real, even though it's just freaking cartoons. Like it's just like it's amazing where it's like he's always gonna be fine with everything until he's like pretty much like a scared little monkey in a cage, like, oh no, you know, and then I don't know, they just do it's such a great balancing act with this bit.
Yeah, really I fun. agree. And I would say that in this particular segment and in all the Treehouse of Horrors, but in this particular one, there's a lot of fun, like, alternate drawing styles of the characters. Like, first we see Flanders as the devil, which is a fun drawing style for him. And then seeing overweight Homer eating all the donuts, super fun. And then the last one, the greatest one, is Homer with a donut head. And just to see his, like, bulbous eyes and, like, this donut shape is so fun.
I also love Flanders being, like, a very scary, menacing devil when he gets mad.
Yeah.
So, and actually, I remember these really genuinely scaring me as a kid.
Yeah.
And this one was just so, like, crafty and great. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, everything about it.
Do you guys want to hear the jury of the damned?
Yeah.
It's Benedict Arnold, Lizzie Borden, Richard Nixon. Hey, I'm not dead yet.
I did you a favor.
John Wilkes Booth, Blackbeard the Pirate, John Dillinger, and the starting line of the 1976 Philadelphia Flyers.
I just remembered one of the lines I love so much is when Marge is just like, this is the only chair we had left. And it's, this chair is high, says I.
I totally forgot about that. That's so funny.
So it's like that jury has so much compassion for like, such a ragtag team. Like, ugh.
This whole episode had a bunch of like just good, like jokey jokes. When Homer wakes up and he's just like, now to make my dream a reality, and then the donuts are gone. He's like, yeah, we ate the other donuts and there were two left, but we chucked them at this old man. Cut to Grandpa being just pelted by birds and donuts.
It's so good. There's also really there's another great Blackbeard moment. I mean, how many times do you get to have like a Blackbeard character in The Simpsons and make jokes off of him? But toward not the enough. End of the segment, not enough. Toward the end of the segment, Blackbeard looks at the back of Marge and Homer's wedding photo and he says, "Arr, 'tis some kind of treasure map." And Benedict Arnold says, "You idiot, you can't read." And he goes, "Aye, tis true. My debauchery was my way of compensating." What a great way to say I became a debaucherous pirate because I can't read.
Listen to that, kid. Stay in school.
Listen to that, kids. Go to your tutoring session on Monday. Go to it, even if you don't want to.
Yeah, you don't like her. You're going to warm up to her.
I assume it's a her. Tutors are very maternal roles. I don't know.
I just meant because women are smarter than men.
Oh, that's true. That's true as well.
Sorry, men.
I'm stating no that one.
Yeah. There's so many great. I mean, they're able to make a lot of like political jokes in this episode. There's a moment where the Devil Flanders, after Lisa requests a trial to see if he can claim Homer's soul, Devil Flanders says, "Oh, you Americans with your due process and fair trials. This is always so much easier in Mexico." I'm able to do that. Yeah, it's so fun. And Lionel has so many great moments in this segment too. You know, there. One of my notes that I wrote down was, Lionel Hutz is trying to negotiate, and he says, "Bathroom breaks every half hour." And then the devil says, "The jury will be chosen by me." And he goes, "Agreed." "No, wait." Yeah,
it's also fun because it's like it might be one of his scummiest like episodes, like as far as like
who Lionel Hutz.
Yeah,
yeah. I know. And we met him originally, I think, when he was chasing the ambulance that Bart was in after he got hurt on, what was it? It was an early season one episode. I don't think it was The Gorge. Anyway, somebody will tell us.
Yeah, Lionel Hutz is, anytime he shows up, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, he's great. I love him. He's the best. I mean, all the Phil Hartman characters are the absolute best. I know. Do you guys want to talk about Nightmare at 5.5 feet?
Yes. Please.
Especially if you're a huge Twilight Zone fan. Are you a big Twilight Zone fan? Yeah, we all are. Okay, good. glad we came to an agreement. This is a summary for this. Still jittery from a nightmare in which the school bus crashes, Bart boards the bus headed for school on a rainy day. During the ride, he spots a gremlin ripping wires and metal from the side of the vehicle. When others look out the window, they see nothing. Bart watches as the monster loosens nuts from the bus's rear tire. In desperation, he pulls the emergency exit handle, hangs out the window, and defeats the monster with an emergency flare. At school, the crowd can see the damage the monster inflicted on the bus, but that does not prevent Bart from being sent away to a mental institution for the rest of his life. On the way to the madhouse, Bart is once again tormented by the gremlin. I forgot that at the end of this segment, he goes to the crazy house.
So he does. And some manners.
decapitated Ned Flanders is held up
at
the end.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. That terrified me as a child.
It's so scary.
It's so scary.
I love Bart coming into this story. The school bus. Oh, they probably meant ghoul bus.
Yeah.
No, it says right here, school bus. Well, nothing scarier than going to school, right?
Yeah. I know, he's trying to compensate for it. There's so many great jokes in this particular segment. One of my favorites is Milhouse showing Bart the crusty trading cards.
Bart, look! Crusty trading cards! The long-awaited 8th series!
Krusty visits relatives in Annapolis, Maryland. Krusty poses for trading card photo.
He seems to be running a little low on ideas.
Well, at least you got the gum.
Ow! I cut my cheek!
And one of them is
the long-awaited 8 series.
Yeah. Krusty visits relatives in Annapolis, Maryland. Krusty poses for trading card photo, which would be a great trivia name, team name, I think.
Yeah,
a
deep totally.
Cut. And then also this is one of my favorite Principal Skinner moments, where Bart walks into the bus and Principal Skinner is sitting there.
Hello, Simpson. I'm riding the bus today because Mother hid my car keys to punish me for talking to a woman on the phone. She was right to do it.
That'd be so great. Yeah.
Deanna, what are some of your favorite moments that you remember from this episode or reasons that it was so good?
I mean, the John Lithgow version of this was like one of my favorite things as a kid. So like the first time I saw this, like my brain just literally melted. Yeah. I just like couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you never, I don't know, like there's so many places to nerd out about it.
Right. No,
it's like,
rich. It's super rich with it. And I think that anytime that, and they do this a lot for the Treehouse of Horrors, but when they reference something like a Twilight Zone episode that is so iconic, it does make your brain melt a little because it's something that you feel, especially if you're watching this as a kid, that you're the only one that knows about this. And then when they make such a flawless reference to it, it's beautiful. And they're so good at it. Yeah.
I think I said this when we talked about Treehouse last time, but the best thing about the Twilight Zone ones is that it's Twilight Zone, but funny and with the Simpsons.
I know.
It makes it better.
Yeah.
Like, it genuinely is just better.
Yeah.
And it's so fun because you already know it, but then it's just like, everything is times 1,000.
Right.
Yeah, there are so many good moments in this. Some that come to mind immediately. I talked about this last week about the, or 2 weeks ago with the Hans Moleman part. Just there's a gremlin on the side of the bus. I just made my last car payment. Explodes.
I know.
But something that, like, there are such little touches that I think are so fun. Anytime that you see Bart kind of deviate from what's normal, in this case, he's scared, which we don't see very often. It's still cool to see that he's still Bart at the end of the day. So when he's looking for flares and there aren't any because the bullies are putting them in Martin's pants, he goes and grabs one falls out, and then he quickly tucks it back into Martin's pants because he's still Bart Simpson at the end
so
of the
good.
Day.
Yeah, I love those little details like that. And I mean, to have Bart be crying wolf essentially and having nobody listen to him seems very appropriate for his character, and that could be fitting for any Simpsons episode, not just this one. But it makes the terror, especially like that whole, it sort of reminds me of like Shutter Island, where like nobody believes you to be sane when you claim certain things, and of course it gets carts off to the mental institution. It's a very real fear, and so I think it taps into the psyche of the people watching it in a very real way that not a lot of other animated shows would.
No, especially too, we're like kind of touching on, like, I agree absolutely with what Allie said, where it's like, it's weirder for the situation to happen to Bart than any other character because he's always in control of his own little universe. Like,
And he would be a prankster here. Like, it makes sense that Skinner doesn't believe him.
Of course, yeah. But we talked about this previously, but I want to touch upon it again. What makes this segment compared to the original Twilight Zone version even scarier in the Simpsons world is that in the Twilight Zone version, you know, they made it in the 50s or 60s, right? And they were limited in their way of using makeup and you know, making the gremlin look really, really scary. So when we see it now, it's a little comical. In the Simpsons version, it's consistent with the rest of the world, so we believe it more to be this like real threat, and it's freaky.
Oh, it's so scary. It kind of reminds me of I'm failing myself right now. What's the scary guy from Twin Peaks? Bob.
Yeah,
kind of has a Bob-esque thing as a gremlin, but then with the same Simpsons domed.
he also has like a Seussian quality to him. Yeah, my boyfriend Mike was, I should credit him for that. He was the one that pointed it out when we were watching it. I always mention him in every episode. I'm so sorry.
No, please.
No, you like your partner. That's terrible.
I know, it's so gross. Bye. And you know what? They even had it in the episode guide that it was referencing Nightmare 20,000 Feet, starring William Shatner. Anyway.
Billy Shat.
What were you going to say, Deanna?
I forgot because I got distracted by Shat, and I just wanted to know what he shat on. My brain is full of pus. But no, I love, like, just even like You know how, like, when you're younger, too, where it's just, like, how you love tactile things that much more? And just, like, the detail of how the gremlin, like, kind of removes the hubcap of, like, the wheel.
It's very satisfying.
It's so stressful where it's just, like, oh, my gosh.
And that glare that he has, that menacing glare of just, like, being very persistent with it and, like.
Oh, my God. And, yeah, when he locks eyes on it, goes, like, the gremlin, like, smiles and, like, scratches on, like, the side of the bus. Like,
yeah.
I also love, I love you think that you're going to see the gremlin, but then it's Willie. Whose mule wouldn't go in the rain, and so I had to put 18 bullets in it.
Yeah, I love a good. I feel like Willie pops up in almost every Treehouse episode.
As he should. Also, Uter is someone that we see mostly in Treehouse stuff.
Yeah,
it's always fun. Just I love that. Like, there's nothing wrong with his candy that I could think of, but I love that Bart just hates it.
I know. He's the best.
Yeah,
and he's just such a great punchline.
And he's a good device in this. He unties Bart and then just kind of like goes somewhere else on the bus. I got places to see.
We don't have to worry about him anymore. I'm
trying to think, has he ever been like kind of flushed out, like any depth? We know nothing about him really.
Not that I know of.
German,
he's
and
German.
German and loves candy.
We see his parents at one point.
Really, I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think so. I can't recall the exact episode, but I think that that's as far. Like, he just, for me, feels like one of the characters from Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. Like I think he's supposed to be Augustus Gloop.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so I think that as far as we know about Augustus Gloop, we know about Uter. Like, it wouldn't go further than that.
That's great.
Yeah, which feels appropriate. And then, of course, this segment ends with the gremlin going off the side of the bus, tumbling into the dirt, and then Ned Flanders finds him and wraps him up in a blanket.
Like, he's kind of cute. Baby. Aw, you want to gouge my eyes out.
He's so oh cute. Oh, yeah, you're trying to scratch my eyes out. And then the last scene that we see Ned Flanders in is with his head on a stick talking, which is so terrifying.
And I love Bart just, you know, it's straight out of the Twilight Zone movie, but just like, you know, look at the bus, I told you I was right, ha ha ha, and going crazy. I'm just like, that may be true, but you were still disruptive.
God, it's so good.
Ralph, when everyone is going over the side of the bus and looking at the gremlin and it's not there, everyone's just like, oh, you're a liar. But then Ralph says something just like, you're delirious, but it's something else. And it was just like a bigger word. It's not delirious. It's like, it's going to drive me
crazy. You're deceptive.
Coming from little Ralph Wiggum.
Otto says, I don't see anything. Milhouse says, hey, who's driving the bus? Yeah.
Such a good one.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel like from like, that what was the episode where like him and Lisa, where it's like, do you feel like that just anytime you go back to old episodes before that, that's like, it's just kind of tempered your opinion of Ralph, even though he's so Ralph, you know? Like,
but
you
that one definitely
human,
like,
it makes him such
endeared him to me. Yeah,
such a real person. Mm, you know?
And he was such a commanding George Washington.
I want to see that again. I mean, that should be. A lot of people have been buzzing about Hamilton the musical, which I know very little about besides that it's very good. I want to see Ralph Wiggum as George Washington the musical. Maybe we should write that and submit it to Fringe Festival.
Ooh. Yeah, we should. That'd be amazing.
Oh boy. Oh boy. So many projects. What else was I going to say about this? Oh, I don't know. Oh, and off of the Ralph thing, that episode in particular is so special because I feel like we've all had, especially in our youths, a choose me moment.
Oh, yeah.
Whether we were giving a choose me card to somebody or receiving it and just knowing deep down that, it's not like the same. I don't feel the same about you. And this is so gross. I just feel like that's part of the reason why that episode is endured. It's just so great and strong and relatable.
Absolutely.
And you always have the Bart in your life, too, that points out, like, see, right here, if you go in frame by frame, you can see it's heartbreaking.
It really encapsulated that, like, young heartache so well.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. And the perfect character to do that was Ralph Wiggum.
My cat's breath smells like cat food.
We just all cry.
Also, I'm sorry for all your diehard Simpsons fans that listen to this, because I'm sure it's so grating. And that episode where that one thing happened, yeah.
Oh, whatever.
We're
beyond that. Yeah, because we've always said that we focus more on like broad stroke stuff, and so when it comes to like minutia or getting the exact wording right, unless we completely derail the meaning of the joke, I think it's fine. And I think that if you are spending your life obsessed with getting every single word right in like a reference to something that you love, your time is better spent.
Yeah.
Right.
I like living life.
I like living life and enjoying things. And also, it's not a competition for who is enjoying something more.
Oh, totally.
Enjoy it at your own pace.
I got a mushy brain, I'll be honest. Yeah. Especially too, where it's like, you know, having Fox, like, mm-hmm. you didn't really watch anything in sequence, like, because it's like right. they're like already reruns of like previous seasons while you're watching the current season. So
yeah, it's very disorienting.
I don't know, like when FX did the like all the Simpsons ever, like Jonah and I were like losing our minds, like, oh shit, like all of this was this season, like I right. don't remember that at all, and it's yeah. so good. And
yeah and that's what's been really great about doing this podcast, because it's been a real treat to revisit it in that way and just see, oh my god, like we recently did Bard of Darkness with Aaron Pierce,
oh, awesome.
Our mutual friend, and I completely forgot that it was the season 6 opener, excuse me, and supposed to be the season 5 finale, but then season 6 was so strong that it just opened the floodgates, I feel. Yeah. And yeah, it's incredible to see, especially with the showrunners, like the waves of the different styles of The Simpsons that remain consistent within the season. But because I watched out of sequence, I never picked up on that. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, it's been great.
Thank God for that hurricane or earthquake that happened that made
earthquake,
that.
Earthquake, yeah. Yeah, we talked about how the Northridge earthquake forced them to delay the production on the Bard of Darkness. It was supposed to be season 5 finale, but because the earthquake happened, they had a delay, so they had an extra month to animate it. So that's why it became the season 6 opener. And that's why it's so well animated. Like, there are things that they spent a little bit more time on. Anyway.
Which also... Yeah, oh, I had the pleasure of getting to work with a lot of Simpsons people on this one show for MTV, and it's interesting to hear opinions about how things are animated now.
Oh,
which I can't put on a podcast.
No,
or name people.
Well, we get it. It's a different frontier.
Yeah, the switch to digital really, like, I think it affected maybe The Simpsons more than any other show. But also they've been around for so long.
I know.
Like, so that makes sense.
The difference was so stark. I think that one of the main differences that at least I picked up on was that everything has like a drop shadow when you watch The Simpsons now, which it didn't really before.
Well, I'm trying to think of where I, like, when it first started, because it's like you go back and some episodes you see it and other ones you don't, but it's like definitely Treehouse, you usually... Like, if there's anything spooky, usually there's a drop shadow animated on it, because you're just like, how do they get so much time and money?
Yeah, like, yeah, it's a lot. It's something that I never quite picked up on before, but now I'm realizing, like, that's extra effort. That's, I don't even know how many hours or days or whatever, but it's just more jobs for yourself that I don't know if it's improving it or taking it, I don't know.
This next segment has very cool use of shadows.
Oh, it does.
Which I love. Should we go to this next
one? This
sorry,
one
I
is
keep
one
derailing
of
this
no,
train.
No,
please.
It's totally welcome and what we want. So this next segment is the last segment of the episode, and I feel like it's one of the more famous segments of this episode and of Treehouse of Horror in general. It's Bart Simpson's Dracula. After closing a deal to buy the Springfield Blood Bank, Mr. Burns invites the Simpsons to his castle in Pennsylvania for a midnight dinner. Lisa harbors suspicions that Burns is a vampire. At the castle, her fears prove valid. She and Bart stumble on Mr. Burns' secret hiding place. After being pursued by their host's undead minions, Burns bites Bart. Back at home, Lisa is awakened by Vampire Bart and her other schoolmates floating outside her window, Lost Boys style, and I threw that one in. Finally convinced that their son is one of the undead, Marge and Homer learn from Lisa that the only way to save Bart is to kill the head vampire. Surprisingly, after Homer drives a stake through his boss's heart, Bart remains a vampire. To her horror, Lisa discovers that every member of her family, including Grandpa, is a vampire, and that the real head vampire is Marge. This is a great one.
It's so good.
It's got everything.
And it's exactly who you want to be a vampire.
Oh, yeah.
I love the opening on Kent Brockman showing the thing.
Another local peasant has been found dead, drained of his blood with two teeth marks on his throat. This black cape was found on the scene. Police are baffled.
We think we're dealing with a supernatural being, most likely a mummy. As a precaution, I've ordered the Egyptian wing of the Springfield Museum destroyed. Nice work, Ed.
Yeah, just like, what happened? It's very clearly some kind of vampire, but then the cape that says Dracula on it is maybe one of my favorite moments. Cutting to the cops saying just like, oh, it's we're thinking it's some kind of supernatural. A mummy of some sort.
Yeah. We think we're dealing with the supernatural being most likely a mummy. As a precaution, I've ordered the Egyptian wing of the Springfield Museum destroyed. So good.
Oh, that's one of those tags that, like, you. I mean, I myself did not remember that. Mm-hmm. Just makes the show so much better than it is.
They're so good. Just in general, they're so good with like packing jokes and lines into every single moment, which I can only imagine means that they take the longest to write scripts, because it's just like they don't waste any time.
Oh, no.
I just love it. But then also, I love this line. When Lisa first says her suspicions at the dinner table, Marge says, Lisa, stop being so suspicious. Did everyone wash their necks like Mr. Burns' ass? Like little things like that are just kind of silly and light and, you know.
Yeah,
get the story going.
I like that we get to see the whole family. Like, it's it seems like a dumb and obvious thing to say about a Simpsons episode, but I like the Simpsons, you know.
Yeah. Hanging out doing Simpsons-y stuff.
Yeah, like, you know, because the other ones, it was mostly Homer, and then the other one was mostly Bart, and then you get the whole crew in here.
Yeah,
and you get to kind of pit the personalities against each other. And I love Lisa being the Nancy Drew who just needs to kind of solve everything. And, you know, there's no way that we're going to find his secret lair, and then immediately finding it and everything about it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Even out to the is it the fun or silly
That's
side?
That's my
super fun, happy slide.
His animation there is something my dad and I do all the time. Just the up and down arms is so funny.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, what am I going to be back?
I know, yeah.
That's a good way to live life, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't argue.
When are you
going
to be back? In this moment, you know?
Yeah. There's a great, there are so many great lines. But this one I particularly love. Homer says, oh, Lisa, you and your stories. Bart is a vampire. Beer kills brain cells. Now let's go back to that building thingy where our beds and TV is. And they do a similar joke when we were talking about Bart of Darkness, when Lisa says, like, you know, quiet brain, I don't need you now. I've got popularity. And then, like, her next line is, boo, I'd like to go to your party. So it's like that immediate, you know, reaction or consequence to what she just said. I just love that they do that. And also, this segment is preceded by the scariest painting in the entire painting gallery, which is the dogs playing poker.
They're dogs and they're playing poker.
What? And doesn't Homer get really close to the screen? He's like, don't you get it? Or
yeah,
something.
And just the hysterical laughter at the end. He goes mad.
Yeah, I love it.
We didn't have, or the story we had for this painting was far too scary. So instead, we just kind of threw something together.
Yeah. I love that commentary on it. Oh, yeah. And then this is such a great moment. I've talked about this before, but I love it so much. It's a moment that my dad and I especially really loved when Homer goes down to drive a stake into Mr. Burns' heart. And he, like, works really hard at driving the stake. And he's like, bah, did it. And then Lisa's like, Dad, that's his crutch. Oh, okay. Blah! And then he gets a stake in there, and then Mr. Burns dies, and then he, you know, like, goes back to life for a second and goes, you're fired, and then he goes back to being dead. It's very fun. Yeah.
Are there any other moments from this episode that you particularly love? Just either this segment or just overall?
Every time I hear the term Happy Halloween, I immediately go into the Peanuts.
Oh, yeah, it's
I
so
like
good.
Since this episode forever. Holy I can't shit. Divorce the two things.
That's great. Perfect That's ending. A great way to live your life. I love that they, A, had that idea, B, fully committed to it, complete with Sam's little helper being Snoopy. And it's so subtle. It's just like this last detail of him coming in and doing the Snoopy dance.
Oh my god, it's just perfection.
Yeah. Do you want to hear the stuff you may have missed in this episode?
Hell yeah.
Okay. Well, we already kind of touched upon this, but a painting of dogs playing poker replaces the sailboat painting above the Simpsons' couch. So that's interesting. Officer Eddie tosses a copy of the Mona Lisa into a fire after Chief Wiggum orders the Egyptian wing of the Springfield Museum destroyed. A neon sign inside Burns' country estate reads, "To secret vampire room, no garlic." Great. And the foreword of Mr. Burns' book, Yes, I Am a Vampire, is written by Steve Allen. Which they've made a lot of Steve Allen jokes, or at least a handful on The Simpsons. Yeah. It was a 90s, man. What do you want? It was hot. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Everything about this makes for a perfect treehouse of horror and is one of my very favorites, if not the my favorite, like number one.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you picked this episode.
Yeah,
what are your guys' thoughts on Marge being the head vampire reveal at the end?
I think it's feminist and cool.
I think it is cool.
I'm all right with it.
Yeah. And
let that lady have some fun.
Totally. That's her line at the end when they're like, "You're the head vampire, Mom." She's like, "What? I have a life outside of the house." Just such a perfect line for that moment. Yeah. Yeah, this was great. I mean, I think that this one, the early Treehouse of Horrors are just so iconic because they really set the stage for, you know, what they would explore later on.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Have you seen any recent Treehouse of Horrors?
We try to, and they're usually generally on. It's so hard because it's like the voice acting's changed over the years.
Yeah, just in like normal human living.
Yeah, it just feels like a little tiny pieces of it just crumbles off every year. It just like...
Right.
But, like, you know, it's like there's still good stuff. There's still good writers. I feel like the Treehouse episodes still hold on the strongest, I think, just because it's so specific. I think it's easier to follow a mold. But I don't know. I'm one of those idiots where it's like, I like the old stuff. I don't know. I'm an idiot. I'm also old, so I don't know.
No, it's fine. I mean, we've been called out for preferring the older seasons, too, just because that's what we, you know, first fell in love with The Simpsons by, like, that's what our initial exposure to The Simpsons was. And yeah, I would say that, like, earlier Treehouse of Horrors, they definitely have, like, a definitive, like, style and tone to them. But I will say that, you know, watching the later Treehouse of Horrors, having not seen the more recent episodes as much as I have, like, maybe seasons 2 through 10, it still feels like classic Simpsons, where they're able to be creative in that way and sort of like defy, you know, the limits of the world. It's so fun.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as, I don't know, I might step on people for saying this.
Don't worry about that.
As far as like writing style of the newer stuff, for me personally, it's weird where it's like, I feel like, I don't know, it's just like, so the humor's gotten a little too on the nose a lot, where it's like they kind of like get like the gist and like, all right, this is close enough, where it's like if you look at other institutions that are kind of old too, where it's like The Onion still like holds on to it. It's like,
right,
if you look at like an Onion article today versus a decade ago, they all go together.
Yeah, totally.
You know, where it's just, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's an interesting parallel, because The Onion feels similar in the style of being very satirical in the way that The Simpsons, and groundbreaking in their being satirical the way The Simpsons has been.
Yeah, because it's like both are like equally like super smart, but it's like they're good at burying their leads, and like, you know, but like being funny on the level of like if you get the reference or if it's just good writing, you know? So it's like, I don't know. It'll get good again, I swear.
Yeah. Well, we were delighted by, we watched the Treehouse of Horror not this year, but the year before, so 2014. And, you know, we both were surprised in how it was different, but it was great in its own way. Like, it almost felt like a short film. Like, the episode was Homer going to hell, literally, and then enrolling in a school down there and thriving, like he's like the star student in the school of hell. And they were able, the pacing of it wasn't, it didn't feel like a normal Simpsons episode. It just felt like more of like
beautiful
a short
film.
Yeah. So yeah, it was interesting to see that they're really exploring a new path with it. But, and I've said this before, I don't envy the job of someone writing on The Simpsons currently, or writing on any show that isn't SNL that's been going on for this long. It's just it's a tall order to try and write new things and generate new ideas.
No, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially since it's such a beloved show too, you know, fans are going to get in your face about it. But then again, we've talked to people that worked on the show. Josh Weinstein said that even in season four, they were like, this sucks. Like, with like primitive internet, they were breaking through and being like, sucks. Season two is better. So it's always going to be that way.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's got to be a weird time too, just as a writer, where it's like, there's so many shows now where it's just like, if you're like, it's hard enough to be a creative individual who makes their own content and for the sake of gaining experience and having income, you know, writing for a room where it's like, it's not your, it's your ideas, but for in some other voice, that's not yours.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
like, I feel like there's enough new media out there where it's like you can write in these rooms that are closer to your own sensibilities.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, I could see where it's even harder now for something like The Simpsons.
Right, right. Yeah, because they are this bridge to kind of an older world of comedy writing, which makes it seem like it's, we're talking about Norman Lear era, but it's not. It's like, it's more recent, but different. It's interesting. I think that it's a blessing and a curse that there are so many different outlets right now for content.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
definitely.
It's very overwhelming. I don't know what to do with my day. I don't know who I should be or like trying to pitch for, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or shoot for or whatever. It's weird. So I guess the lesson is just be true to yourself.
I think so.
Watch a lot of old Simpsons.
Yeah, watch a lot more Simpsons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is also a blessing and a curse because I'm like, this is inspiring. I'll never write like this.
Which of the Simpsons characters do you think that you relate to the most?
I'll be honest, like, if Lisa Simpson didn't exist when I was a kid, I would have been just fucked. Like, because it's like there were no relatable, dorky, asexual female characters growing up. Mm-hmm. Not that there really is now, but like, well, there's some, but very few.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's like to have a female character that like wasn't necessarily chasing boys or always primping themselves and like, I don't know, it just, it was nice to like have that gender neutral outlet of like, and she was just dorky and reveled in it and dealt with her own shit. I just,
totally.
I loved Lisa so much.
Yeah. She was strong and yet she can be vulnerable and she was a real kid and yet felt like an adult. Like she just was very like multidimensional and yeah, I don't know. I never read Nancy Drew. I never did any of those things. But Lisa Simpson was really like my first feminist icon, I guess.
For many people.
Yeah. And I agree. It's sad to think and to reflect on. There's not a lot of other female characters like her today. There are more, but I still feel like she stands strong as like one of the leading characters that you could watch as a kid and feel like you're relating and you're seen, like that's you on the screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, where it's like just in dabbling with animation development, like it's interesting that even, yeah, it's 2015 and it does come up. It is a concern where it's like certain unnamed networks still, like if you pitch a female leading character, some networks are like, okay, well, they need a male sidekick.
Yeah, because they're going to scare the boy audience.
Yeah, it's not accessible enough, and they still, like, it's really weird and tough, and, like, it's not the executive's fault. They're like, trained to appease a multi-headed beast, and, like,
right.
They're chasing what they think the audiences will actually want, because it's a business. It's really weird.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, part of that could be, like, well, the numbers say that blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, we're in a position of power to kind of change the influence of what these kids may want. We're just providing them with the only options that involve, if there is a female character, she needs to have a male sidekick. Like, we could change the rules and change the game, but it just takes, like, such a drastic shift that, you know, I think a lot of people are scared to make that move. There are some glimmers of hope that I'm seeing every now and then, but nothing that is as mainstream as, you know, I would like.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's still going to be, I was going to name names of TV shows. There's still going to be X TV show and X TV show. There's still going to be, especially in the kids area, the Transformers E type shows that are going to be very dominant.
because yeah, they're toyetic.
Yeah. Oh, you know all the terms.
You gotta sell those toys, baby.
Yeah, I have hope for the future. that's how I'll end this.
Well, I mean, like, it is cool that Lisa's still on TV.
It is cool.
I mean, that says something to Lisa too. I mean, I know that obviously it's a huge machine, and the Simpsons will never die. But I like to credit Lisa for staying true to herself the whole time. And
yeah,
they could have dumbed her down at any point, and no one would have had it.
I feel like one of the first Facebook groups I ever joined was called the Lisa Simpson Book Club.
Aww.
And I don't know if they ever really updated it frequently enough to make it like a thing. But I was like, I would be into that. And also, I feel like that should be a subscription box. I should get into the subscription box business.
Oh, you
of
should.
Of like sending out books that Lisa would read, and you know, people would be happy.
I think you should jump on that.
Yeah. I should jump on that. I got so many things.
I'm noticing.
This podcast being the only thing.
So if you could write something on the blackboard that you took away from this episode of our podcast or the show, what kind of message would you be telling everyone?
Oh, no.
Jonah had the same panic. It doesn't have to be a joke or anything. It can just be like something, a takeaway from this conversation or from this episode.
And of course, my beloved husband didn't warn me about this. God damn it. Oh, man. Now I just have the like trust in yourself and you can achieve anything because we're
like
talking.
That's good.
Not this episode. Oh. That's just our conversation.
It could be the convo of
conversation.
Yeah.
Let me think. I just record and like send it to you to edit in like 7 days later.
From a voice memo, like very loud trains in the background.
Yeah, hey guys, I figured it out. I think it's I'll accept it.
Oh my god.
I think we've had enough morals. We don't have to have one more.
Yeah, no pressure.
Oh man, cause Oh, my squirrel brain. Now it's going to different treehouses.
That works too. They're all connected by the Treehouse Network.
Oh, if it were just an overarching, it would be all work, no play.
Makes Homer something.
Yay. Yeah,
don't mind if I do.
That's good.
I love it.
I like that.
I'll just go with don't mind if I do.
Don't mind if I do. That's a good way to live.
Yeah.
Oh, when else am I going to be here?
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
I love
when
it.
Else am I going to be here?
When else am I going to be here? I think that's it.
That's a great,
thank you for bailing
me out. And that's another book that we could write that
honestly,
people would buy like hotcakes because, you know, personal health motivational books are hot these days.
Like hotcakes.
When else am I going to be here? It could be the new like Power of Yes or whatever.
Totally.
Didn't Shonda Rhimes just come out with a book called The Year of Yes or something?
Oh,
I don't know. Everyone has their own book like that right now.
You know what?
Good on them.
Get that money.
And you know what?
Get it.
I'll buy them for sure.
Yeah. And also, it's just like, books are so much work. I don't, like, yes.
Yeah,
reading them is hard.
What?
Reading them is hard.
It is hard. Oh, man.
That's why I'm a pirate.
My subscription box is going to go under real quick because reading is hard.
And also, some of them we buy and, like, they've been sitting there. I won't say which ones.
Yeah. Are they like, what am I trying to say? No, nothing.
Well, there you have it.
I was going to say something like the books you buy with the intention of reading them because you know you should be reading them, sort of like a New Yorker subscription.
There's the shoulds.
Yeah, there's
definitely
the
shoulds.
I always feel like I buy at least like one to two shoulds and then one totally will and would, and I'm already reading it because it's trash.
What was that? Judd Apatow's book is
Is it really good?
It's just a series of really awesome interviews. I recommend that one.
Oh,
definitely.
Okay, cool.
I recommend it to everyone.
Yeah. The only books I read are by comedians or about comedians or The Simpsons.
I just bought Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl, the Carrie Brownstein book that she just released. It's great. I mean, I've only read like the first two chapters, but it's great. And she's a great writer.
Oh,
so that's
awesome.
Sort of like a hybrid of, you know, like motivational, autobiographical, comedy-ish related.
Yeah, Lisa would be reading them.
Lisa would be. Oh, you guys.
This has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad that you recorded my stumbling voice.
Oh my gosh.
It's an been honor a treat.
Where can people find your stuff online?
Oh shit. Everywhere. it's scattered on Tumblr, and I'm not really on Facebook anymore because my mother is. I'd say if you want to see like a hodgepodge of my stuff, dlrooney.tumblr.com probably has a good assortment, but in general, just put in Deanna Rooney and you'll find an assortment of really horrible music videos and ugly paintings and such. So yeah.
Is your Dick a Day Tumblr still up?
No, I
it was so good.
I got into a happy relationship and I stopped drawing dicks. It's weird.
But wasn't that part of your courting?
I think I heard that. Was, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like I started working like a big girl animation job and I stopped doodling anymore. I'm like, okay, well, what's something that I could draw every day so I could get back in the habit? And it's just dicks. So,
it was so good.
Anyone that doesn't know, it's just these cutesy little cartoony dicks like sweeping the floor, or cooking
going
bacon,
to work.
Or like, going to
work. A dick in a business suit.
Selling ice cream to a smaller dick.
It's so
just,
good.
It was short-lived but fun.
It's so good. If you ever, I'm sure you have all the images, you should just put out a book. Little dicks.
Yeah, I should.
Yeah.
That's effort.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I feel that way every time I think of like what a cool Tumblr would be. I'm like, I'll secure the Tumblr name, but I don't want to do it.
I know.
It's just so much effort.
Which is where I shouldn't even say this on a podcast, but why, like, there's been occasions we're talking to friends where it's like, we should do a podcast of them. I'm like, but that's like, that's not like a 12 episode order or something. That's like, it just goes on forever.
I know.
Until you're done.
I know.
And like, so,
yeah.
No pressure, you guys.
We're never ending.
I want to do this forever. Well, I guess we don't have I was going to say, we have an ending with the episodes. Not really.
I mean, someone's going to have a favorite that's way out there.
I know. Yeah.
Stay tuned and subscribe, and you'll just see for yourself. You can find us at Simpsons Pod on Twitter and Facebook, and everything's coming up podcast@gmail.com. Could eat at Arby's on OkCupid and at Allie Kurtz.
Her handle is Could Eat at Arby's. It's so good. I was also reminded the other day, I was thinking about Eric DeDorian, as I want to do. He's a treasure. And he had this joke a while back where he was saying he would create a dating website for like sassy Latina girls called OK Stupid. I want him to say that again. But every time you mention OK Cupid, I think about it like 20 minutes later. I'm like, I should have mentioned. Anyway.
And people can find you.
Ooh, I'm at Julia Prescott.
Ooh.
I'm at Julia Prescott on all the things. And that's it.
Wonderful. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy Halloween, everybody! Cool.